Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, we're back. And today with me, I have Joel Kletke, and he is a SaaS and B2B copywriter. So he actually specializes in those two. What's up, Joel?
Not much. Just getting my day going over here and getting things in order. So yeah, it's a bright and beautiful day, and it's fun to be talking to you.
Why did you start focusing on B2B and SaaS?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So when it comes to conversion copywriting, the kind of thing that you're looking for in a client, there's a couple criteria that make for a good relationship. The first is that they've got, you know, a direct conversion, something that can be measurable. So with software, it's a natural fit in that they've got signups, they've got upsells, they've got final sales. So I preferred software to e-commerce, just like the niche better. I like that B2B selling. And so with B2B businesses, there's usually something directly measurable. And then honestly, you know, in the whole big world of different niches and companies, you also want to work with clients who've got the budget to support an ongoing conversion campaign and having different assets worked on. So those two seem to join up nicely because there's a lot of growth in the software space. Some of these bigger B2B companies have the budgets to invest in this kind of thing as opposed to, say, you know, a smaller company or someone like a health coach or something like that.
A lot of the software companies, they run out of funding pretty fast. So how do you choose those clients, and what do you think about that in the first place? Because, you know, they get the funding, they barely ever get any profit. A lot of them collapse. I'm wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly work with later stage software companies, so companies that have been around at least a couple of years, companies that have some proven revenue and a proven client base, companies who are in the really early stages, so totally fresh startups. Normally, they're a little bit more bootstrapped. They're a little bit more price conscious. They don't have the client base or the data to do a full-blown conversion type of project. So usually when I'm looking at a company and evaluating whether or not I want to work with them, you know, I'm most concerned, do they have money today? You know, if they can pay my bills, then I'm interested. But to do this really well, usually, you know, I want to be working in a situation where they've got some proven revenue. They've been around for a little while. It's obviously in my interest, you know, that revenue increases based on the work that we do and they stick around. But at the end of the day, you know, I know that there's only so much I as the copywriter and the conversion consultant can do. So it does come down to their management and their leadership to keep those things alive.
There's one question which I get asked a lot by my clients, and I think you will be a good person to answer this question because I'm not. And that is, how do I choose a good copywriter because I need one?
Yeah. I mean, the world of copywriting can be a gigantic minefield. And I think a lot of the pain that people feel with hiring copywriters is self-inflicted because they don't do their homework. And then some of it is because they, you know, writers can be mischievous, or there's just anybody can slap the word conversion in front of their name and call themselves a copywriter. So some criteria, some things to look for when you're approaching a copywriter. The first is, what does their past work look like? What have they worked on? Who have they worked with? Do they have the proof? So do they have testimonials? Do they have examples of past projects? One of the smart things you can do as a vendor looking to hire copywriters is ask to see past projects and ask the question, you know, don't just ask to see them, but ask the questions about the process that went into putting those together. So ask what it looked like. What was the process? What was the research that went into that piece? Did it go through an editor? What was the team like? So ask about the story behind the pieces. That's going to help you avoid situations where writers are not having a process. They can't communicate that. Or writers are straight up saying they ghost wrote something, and then if they can't talk about, you know, even without naming names, if they can't talk about the process that went into that piece, there's something shady. So first, look at the proof. Second is ask about their process. If you ask a writer about their process and they don't start by talking about research and what they do to collect the intel they need, they're not the writer for you. If they jump straight into the creation phase, or if they say, well, you know, you provide all the detail, that can be a little bit of a red flag. You want to hear how they approach a project. And the other thing is, when you talk to these copywriters, they should be eager. They should be asking questions. A good writer is going to want to know a lot about you, about your audience, about the piece, about where you're at. So those are some criteria to think about when hiring. The other thing is, you really do get what you pay for. So yes, there are charlatan copywriters who charge high ticket prices for not very good work. But if you're trying to source copywriters from places like Upwork, realize that's a big race to the bottom. People are competing based on, you know, tiny little projects, tiny little budgets. They're trying to fly through them just to put food on the table. So where you actually go to source these writers makes a big difference too.
Yeah, on one of the podcasts, and I'm not going to name names this time, but I've heard a guy, and he said he was charging $8,000 for a copywriting project and then outsourcing that thing for $500 on Upwork. You know, which,
yeah, I mean, that certainly happens. That's part of the challenges of the industry and the niche. And I mean, any time that I have other writers working on a project, I disclose that. And I think, you know, anybody honest should. And that's an important question. You know, it's a good thing you bring up, is to ask, you know, is it you writing the copy? Do you have a team? What does that look like? You know, put them on the spot a little bit. They should be able to talk about the way they specifically approach things and how they get it done.
What is your process like? Because you mentioned the process a lot of times. I'm curious what that looks like when a copywriter actually can explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for anything conversion focused, there's always two phases to a project, sometimes three. So in the first phase, it's that research phase. And depending on the project, this can look a little different. But because conversion is all about influence, it's all about understanding your audience, knowing them inside and out, their motivations, their pain points, in their own words. And that last bit's what's important, in their own words. So I start the process by, yes, I'll send you a brief to collect the basics. But beyond that, what we're going to do is I'm going to have some conversations. So we'll set up a call with the company's internal team. I try to talk to someone in sales because they're on the front line. They get the questions, objections all the time. I try to talk to somebody in marketing so that we can make sure that what I'm going to be working on is aligned with where the company is going. So I talk to the internal team, but then we'll look into getting some customer research. So we'll evaluate what they have. Do they have survey responses? Do they have reviews and testimonials? Do they have chat logs? And if they do, I'm going to dig into those to see, well, for example, with chat logs, what questions come up all the time? Because that's going to tell us what questions aren't being answered by the copy right now. When it comes to reviews and testimonials, what features and benefits do they talk about and how do they talk about them? What pain points do they voice that sent them to that solution? How did they talk about them? So this whole time I'm documenting and taking down how these people talk about their problems. Other times we'll run a customer survey that asks really targeted questions about their experience and their journey. And then there's that whole kind of qualitative piece, talking to people, collecting this info. And then there's a quantitative piece. So we'll look at things like heat maps, and we'll look at recorded user sessions and how people actually engage with their landing page or their email series or their website right now. So once we've kind of put together both the what's going on and then use qualitative to kind of understand why that might be happening, from there we're in a good spot to create. So from that point on, I start putting together drafts, but not just in Word docs. I also wireframe. So that's not to take the job of a UX person. I'm not claiming to be a designer. You certainly shouldn't use my wireframe as the final wireframe. But the reason that good conversion copywriters who work on websites and landing pages wireframe is because we understand that the way the copy is displayed is going to have just as big of an impact as the copy itself. So if you have great copy, but it's all broken up unnaturally, you're displayed in one big chunk, or it doesn't flow naturally through the page, it's not going to work as well. So once I put those drafts together, then you go through the revisions process, final sign-off. And then sometimes there's a third phase, and this is the clients that I really love working with, where there's kind of ongoing testing and refinement. So you continue to collect data, continue to look at qualitative and how it changes, and then you form hypotheses and continue to test them. So from a high level, that's what my process looks like. And if you're working with someone who's, you know, done this for a while or is interested in the conversion piece of it, there should look quite similar.
You know, one sentence on your homepage really stuck out, and that's real conversion copywriters don't guess.
Right. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because it mentions that you have a calculated but creative messaging, right? So Can you kind of explain that, because it's, you know, it's not something you usually hear. Copywriting seems like a creative thing, right? But you saying it's sort of like, you know, something that you can actually prove.
Yeah, I mean, when a lot of people think about copywriting, the vision they have is Don Draper locked in his office, slinging whiskey, trying to come up with, you know, the next best tagline or something really clever. And while there might be elements of that to what we do sometimes, the truth is that my job is not to guess. My job is to dig into the data, to pull apart the way people actually experience the product, the way they actually go looking for it, to take what I can observe. And then from there, not to make a blind guess, but to make an informed hypothesis. So once we know, as I mentioned through that process I just talked about, once we've got a good picture of how people are trying to find things, why they go looking for them, what their experience is like, where you sit in the market, then is when we can apply some creative problem solving to it. So it's not just unbridled creativity. It's not sitting down to blank screen and trying to come up with the next most brilliant thing. It's very targeted creativity because we know the end goal. We know the thing we're trying to solve for. We can be creative in how we try to solve for it. There's absolutely room for us to be creative with headlines, to try new ideas, to try new things. But throughout that process, it's never built on a guess. The foundation is never, well, we're guessing that this is why, or we're guessing that this is what's important. It's always informed by some kind of data that we can pull and observe, and then we can test for.
Can you give us some examples of that? Because digging through the data, I think some of the people listening might be lost. Like, what are you looking for? And when you find it, what do you do with it?
Sure. So I'll give you an example of quantitative and qualitative and then how they play together to make a change on a site. So one of the quantitative things that we looked at, I was working with a client, and what they do is they sell for those who want to get a divorce and it's a relatively clean case, they sell the opportunity to do that online. So we started by looking at their analytics and understanding who's coming to this site, what pages are they looking at, how do they engage with it. And one of the metrics that stood out to us right away was that more men converted than women, which is unusual in the divorce space because we know historically women initiate divorce more often than men do. So that was an oddity. That's something that we looked at and went, I wonder why that is. What is it about our site, about our copy, about our imagery that appeals more to men? So we had kind of a broad, you know, sort of understanding there. And we kind of dug into it a little bit more and we looked at, okay, well, what pages are men versus women looking at? What issues, you know, in the help section do men versus women look at? What time of day do men versus women look at the site? And we started compiling this and then I started to look into chat logs. So keep that quantitative piece in the back of your head for a second. And then I started looking into chat logs and I isolated the chat logs that were just from women. And I looked at, okay, well, what do they talk about frequently? So when they describe their problem, their situation, what are they talking about, and what are the issues that they mention most? And so through doing both of those, we got this picture that women in divorce situations are often more financially vulnerable. They're often working more than one job. They're often in situations where they fear their spouse. So all that kind of distilled down, we saw, okay, well, men are converting better, women are converting worse. That led us to look into why women might be converting worse. And then we realized, looking at both parties, that chat was really important to the conversion. People like being able to talk to a person. But because these women were financially vulnerable and working two jobs, they visited the site more often outside of work hours when chat wasn't there. So we knew from doing that, okay, if we extend chat hours, that's our hypothesis. If we extend the hours that chat and phone support are available, maybe women will convert better. And if we communicate that through the copy on the site that they can call anytime and talk to an advisor, maybe that will improve conversions for women specifically. So that's kind of a very detailed example of how you can bring the different parts of the data together. It doesn't always have to be that complex. Sometimes it's just a matter of looking at surveys and seeing, okay, this feature gets mentioned the most often as the thing people love. So instead of burying the way we talk about it on the bottom of a page, let's talk about it very first because that's what appeals to people. It can be as simple as that too. So it can get really, really in depth like I kind of outlined, but it also be, hey, people love this thing. Let's mention it first so that we make sure everybody sees it and let's use the words customers use to describe it in the way we describe it so they immediately relate.
That's a great example. I appreciate it. One thing that I've seen on LinkedIn is that you work at Case Study Buddy. And case studies are great, but I don't think a lot of people implement copy in them, which I think they should because, you know, when someone reads the case study, the next thing they should see is a call to action and then the offer page. Can you give some tips on implementing copy into case studies?
Yeah. So, I mean, Case Study is a company that I rolled off about 2 years ago after working on some case studies for clients and realizing exactly what you're talking about. So there's a lot of storytelling in them. People kind of blindly put these together and they don't think about, well, how can we get these to convert really well? How can we, you know, drive people to action? So some simple tips that we've learned over the years. The first is in your title for the case study, how type titles tend to work really well. So how X company achieved X result, as opposed to just saying something like, you know, X company case study. We've found that with the calls to action at the end, so much of it comes down to the strategy and who you're talking to. So before you go and write the case study, think, who are we trying to appeal to? So is there a specific role or niche or industry? And in the story of this study, what is the big benefit or what is the big challenge that this person was facing? And then when it comes to the call to action, make that call to action appeal to the same pain you solve or benefit that you offer. So that's really cohesive. So what I mean by that is, if I'm a lead and I'm reading a study about how, you know, your feature, let's say you're a chat service and you have this kind of AI robot thing, and I read this case about how this AI robot helped increase sales 50%. Don't leave your call to action at the end a very generic contact us, but have your call to action at the end tie back to that robot. So you could have your call to action be something like, are you interested in automating your chat with AI? Or would you like to see, you know, the type of increases this client got through AI, contact us today. So tying in a really specific call to action can be really powerful. And then the last little tip that I'll mention is, even if your study is a long format study or just a short format study, always try to appeal to both readers and scanners. So even when we write a long format case study where there's a lot of quotes and it reads a lot like a Forbes article, there's always a little sidebar or a little intro, something short, where if all I want is just the facts and I want to consume them really quickly, because different consumers come in at different states of awareness and they have different timelines, make sure that you're making it easy for both readers and scanners to get the information they need and to take action from the information that they get.
Would you then carry over some of the things from the case study onto the actual landing page too, so that people sort of can tie back to it, or how would you handle that?
Yeah, 100%. So you're seeing the tie-in, and this is why these two businesses work so nicely together. The great thing about a case study is when you interview a client to get the details, you're doing the same kind of research that I would be doing to get the copy or the sticky copy ideas for a landing page. So you can take the quotes out of the case study. You can use them as testimonials near areas of friction on your site, or if the case study talks about a specific benefit or feature and the client has a great quote about it, you can pull that proof out of the case study and use that as a testimonial when you're talking about that on your site. You can also take the challenges that they talk about, how they talk about them, and use that kind of copy to talk about the pain on your own landing pages. So for example, if you're dealing with a lead who really understands their problem, they know their pain, they know something's not working, but they don't know how you solve that problem, you can use copy from case studies or the way people talk about their problems there in those case studies to first agitate the pain in your copy before presenting yourself as the solution. So to sort of prove that you're empathetic and you understand where they're coming from. So there's a ton of crossover, and that's why I really like kind of having hands in both pies, is because one plays so nicely into the other.
What's the most popular page on your website? Because since you write a lot, I know you're paying attention to what Google's saying about your writing. So I'm just curious, what's the most popular page on there?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, the site is 100% due for an overhaul. It's kind of a case of shoemaker's kids. Like, I launched that in 2013 and so much has evolved, but I've been doing client work and I haven't changed it. Most popular, aside from blog posts, I'll put those aside because there's some of those that rank really well and I get a bunch of traction for. A ton of people go to both my process page, so the How I Work page, and that when I implemented that, my quality of leads went through the ceiling. I got rid of a lot of tire kickers and my onboarding process got so much easier, because the first question people always used to ask are, what are the next steps? The other page that a lot of people visit, and it's been also very good for kind of weeding out tire kickers and aligning me, you know, with people who I want to work with, is my rates page. So there's a lot of controversy around, do you show your rates, do you not show your rates, how do you show them, do you have ranges, do you have a minimum, do you have exact pricing? And I've experimented with a lot of that. At this point, I've just, because I'm in a stage of life where I'm taking on fewer but bigger projects and I know the site it's going to be overhauled. Right now, I think I just have kind of a basic project minimum on there. But people want to know what you cost, and hiding that information only delays, you know, the inevitable in the conversation. There's no point in, you know, if you can share a range, there's no point in forcing someone to get on the phone with you to learn that. If, you know, if they're thinking that I can write a whole website for $50, they might as well learn that that's not possible right away. So those two pages have had a pretty big impact on me, and they get a lot of views as far as people who come into the site and navigate directly to them. And then there's a handful of blog posts that do really well on their own.
Yeah, I like how you handle the rates page. It sort of gives an idea, but it doesn't give a specific price, you know, so it's interesting.
Yeah, high enough to kick out the wrong kinds of people and low enough that the right kinds of people, like the advice that I've got, you know, over time I've steadily played with rates and increased them and that kind of thing. And the happy medium, you know, the best spot to be is to have clients complain about your price, but go with it anyway. You know, they're a little bit cheesed, but they also see the value in it and they know that they're going to get something great. If you're in a spot where everybody says yes to you all the time, you're probably undervaluing what you do. So I've constantly kind of tested my ceiling and see, you know, where do I fall? And the market will decide if I charge too much for something and I can't deliver or the value is not there, hey, people are going to find out. So, you know, I'm quite comfortable at this point with where I'm at and what I'm charging, because I know that for the right clients, the value is all there and then some. It's not just beefing up rates for the sake of beefing up rates. It's, you know, I want to be able to focus on fewer but better and do those projects really well.
You know, I find a lot of business people, especially small business people, trying to write copy themselves. Mm-hmm. How would you tell someone to train to be, I guess, a DIY copywriter? Or what are your favorite books? Do you have any tips for these people?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of resources that you should definitely go check out today. So the first is copyhackers.com. Joanna Weeb has been around. She is the bona fide queen of conversion copy. And what's great is that she started her whole business teaching startup owners how to write for themselves. So there's a ton of free content there, a lot of stuff in the blog that you can go through that will be really helpful to you. And then she also provides, I don't know, every so often she'll do a sale of her books, but she also provides courses every so often and that sort of thing. So she's a great resource. Talia Wolf, I believe her company's called Get Uplift. I did a great, I think it's great because the feedback's been really positive, sort of rundown with her of how to go from blank screen to high converting copy. Totally free webinar. It's a video. If you search, you know, Talia Wolf, Joel Kletke, copywriting, or just, you know, how to go from blank screen to high converting copy, you'll find it. It's worth the watch, because in that I kind of break down the things that I go looking for, how you can go looking for those. And if you're staring at a blank screen, you don't know where to begin, a good kind of framework for deciding, okay, well, what should my call to action be? What should my headline be? So that's another place to go. If you want to go a bit old school, but really valuable, and you'd have to be pretty committed, but there's a book called Breakthrough Advertising. Don't buy it off of Amazon stuff. People try to sell them for $400. It doesn't make any sense. Just go to breakthroughadvertisingbook.com. About $100. It's really valuable. It is old school, drawing on kind of old case studies, but it presents a process that you can borrow and steal. And then Copy Blogger. So Copy Blogger has a lot of free content. Again, sites like Unbounce or Conversion Excel, they both have fantastic free blogs on writing. So get free where you can get it. And then if you're going to look for a book, you know, invest a little bit in maybe Breakthrough Advertising, or Bob Bly has a fantastic book as well.
What's that book?
I can't think of the title off the top of my head because it's a little bit long, but it's Bob Bly, and it's kind of a how-to sort of copywriting, you know, advertising book. I'll make sure that I send you the name and a link to it after this call, and you can share that. But I've heard really good things about that book as well. Amy Harrison, who's a very talented copywriter in this space, mentioned that it was her favorite book. So I know that one's got some value as well.
That's awesome. What's your career been like? I just curious myself, because you said you had an offer for like a six-figure job on one of your posts, and then you turned that down to be a copywriter. I'm curious about this this choice of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I started, I left university with a degree in entrepreneurship, and I took an entrepreneurship degree because I knew, you know, the type of people I like being around, and I knew more about the type of place I wanted to be than what I wanted to do. So I never, in the beginning, I didn't see any future in writing as a career. The whole world of kind of conversion stuff hadn't opened up to me yet. So I wound up working for a digital marketing agency doing SEO, and I learned that on the job and I enjoyed it. But what that opened for me was seeing, okay, well, there's this whole world of content and websites that need to be written and blog posts and things like that. And so I started doing little writing projects throughout the agency, and then I started picking up some more kind of on the side. And in 2013, I kind of came to a head where I thought, you know what, SEO isn't where I want to be forever. And the whole industry was starting to pay attention to the copy and content side of things. So I thought, well, now's my time. So I quit my job, and surely within like a week or two after putting in my notice, I get this offer from this massive agency here in town who deals with like huge car companies and household names. And for an SEO, it would have been a dream job. It was an opportunity to work with these huge brands on these huge projects and guaranteed six-figure salary. And so suddenly I had to make the decision, you know, all over again between going into a field where, you know, like my parents were supportive, my friends were supportive. They knew that I loved writing, had done, you know, decently with it. But they also, you know, the predominating kind of sentiment is not that writers are rich people. You know, it's always like, oh, you're going to struggle and there's so many writers. And so I kind of made the decision, well, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to bet on my ability to create the same kind of income, the same kind of wealth that I could have earned from this job, because I honestly believe that this is where the industry is going and that there is a market for what I want to do. So 2013, I stepped out on my own. At that time, I was mostly doing content assets, blog posts, ebooks, came across work of Joanna's, started talking to her a little bit in person, or, you know, and she was very encouraging. She helped hook me up with clients and education. And as I learned more about this conversion piece, I started very quickly transitioning to just doing that, because I realized the closer you can get to the end sale, the higher you can charge, the more value there is to the client. And so about 2015, I started doing pretty much exclusively, you know, what I do now. And I've been doing that since. So it's really been kind of just a learning journey and a happy accident that I now get to combine all the analytics knowledge that I learned during my years doing SEO with the creative spirit that I've sort of always had, and the love of writing that I've always had, to merge into this really interesting, unique career. So that's sort of the trajectory there.
Has the SEO studying that you've done before, has that helped write copy in any way?
I mean, more so the analytics bit, mm-hmm. like learning how to go through Google Analytics, learning how to, you know, pull together reports. And it's certainly given me kind of a bigger picture of what people want to accomplish. I definitely wouldn't label myself, you know, quote unquote SEO copywriter. Like, it's something that I consider when I'm putting together a page, but there's so many other things that take higher priority. You know, I ultimately want to sell a person on a product and get them to take action. And copy is certainly important for SEO, but so are links and so are time on site and things like that. So there are elements I think it helps shape me, but it's more so just that analytics bit that's really helped informed what I do.
Awesome. Joel, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Joel Kletke, K-L-E-T-T-K-E, sort of weird last name, and you pronounced it beautifully, so thank you for that. Businesscasualcopywriting.com is my work site. There's some blog posts there, but I definitely need to be writing more, and hopefully I'll have a new site before the end of the year. And then casestudybuddy.com, we're about to have an overhaul as well. So you can engage with me personally, though, on Twitter. I'm on there all the time and happy to chat, and send me an email through either of those sites. I'll be happy to connect with you.
Perfect.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.